Alright, welcome to episode number
3
of NOTG, and this time around, we're going to kickstart this episode talking about what will you buy if you have $4 million? What do you guys think in terms of what type of size and bedroom type should we buy? Should a property buyer buy in order to take advantage of the fact that we should be buying something with a restricted supply and more demand? So what do you guys think? If you look at this, in conjunction with Freehold 99, of course, with this one trend that we can see is that the amount of 99s has increased because government land sales are all 99 years. There's no more Freehold. Freehold are usually on block. It also shows, based on the buoyancy of transactions over the last 8 to 10 years, right, that buyers are very accustomed now to 99s properties as well. Right? If not, all these properties will be stuck in the market, but they're all taken up. So what do you all think based on sizing? I mean, we can give a backdrop. Basically, now you look at one bedders or studio, they'll be around this size. This is like one bed, one plus study. This is two bed, two bath, or maybe some three bedders at 899 square feet. This is three bed compact, three bed premium. This is like three plus study and four bedder. This is usually four, five bedders upwards, right? But in the past, that was different. So what do you think? Which one will you buy? Maybe start from Murong.
I think to put the context first, why is there a division line of 2013? It's because 2013 is when total debt servicing ratio was implemented. Yeah. It dramatically changed how much a person can loan after MAS standardized loan eligibility across banks. And what happens is when everybody's affordability is restricted and developers make a business decision that in order to keep the price quantum palatable for the market, they have to start building smaller homes. Mm. Right, and that's why you see the shift in the chart is after 2013, developers built smaller units, but also at the same time that those layout in the newer developments nowadays are generally more efficient than the pre-2013 era where we see planter, bay window, etc. So it's totally not like just 100% loss of space. Okay, coming back to Melvin's question.
Which one will you buy?
In short, I would say that when you buy, think of when you're going to sell and who you can sell to, right? And I think the general advice is, if you are buying into something that is easy to buy, it will usually likely end up hard to sell. And reversing it, if you buy something that is hard to buy, it will generally lead to it being easier to sell. Of course, it's a general, it's not like a blanket advice. So my census is, personally, I have a preference towards buying 3-bedroom at a minimum to a 4-bedroom. This will be, okay, assuming I'm in the outside central region or I'm the rest of central region, this allows me to have a very healthy pool to sell to eventual HDB upgraders. Right. They come from a 4-room flat, 5-room flat. They are used to like a
space.
3 bedrooms already. Mm. Right, so that will allow these people who have maybe profited from their HDB, right? Mm. They have the means to actually upgrade, and I want to sell to own stay people. I don't want to sell back to investors who are generally holding 1 and 2 bedders. Because investors, they are number sensitive.
Correct.
Right? Whichever presents a better yield, a better numbers, lower they are price. Flexible in terms of location.
Yeah.
Whereas for own stay people, they focus on needs and emotions. They have a reason to be at a certain location based on school, based on parents.
Familiarity.
Yeah. Mm. And I, as an investor, I want to sell back to our own stayer. So that's my comment.
So go for 3-4 bedders in the OCR region.
No. As in 3-4 bedders in general.
Right.
In terms of location-wise, I think we have to balance between your own preference in terms of your investment methodology.
Right.
As well as your budget. As well as whether, are you going to stay there? Right. So your own location also determine where you enter.
Right. So as we are speaking, I think what we'll do next is we will further dissect this chart into OCR, RCR, and CCR, so that we can see the percentage of all this in the three regions. Then we can make even a better decision. Thanks, Yu-Yong. How about George? What do you think? Okay, let me rephrase my question. Looking at two components, the amount of supply in terms of the bedroom types and the size in the overall stock of the market for properties that are in the last 22 years, we don't calculate properties before 2000 because they belong to the older category. What would you buy looking at also the freehold and 99s component? What type of properties will you store for yourself in terms of your portfolio?
I think largely it depends on which estate would it be. if I'm going for something that is OCR, because if let's say I'm going for something that's at OCR, maybe I can go for a 4-beta. That price point, maybe I can only get something RCR for a 2-beta.
Okay, so let's say I throw in a budget.
Sure.
Come you on. Have...
Exciting.
You have... You have a $4 million budget.
Huh? $4
million? But you only got one bullet. You only got one name left. All right? $4 million. And we all know that not all freehold properties that are near school or new launch or whatever is on in D9, 10, 11, not all of them will see upward kind of graph. Some has stagnation over the last 10 years, right? Okay. So you got $4 million. But you only got one name.
Why 4 million? Why the betting number?
So that I can expand your choice, lah, right? So okay. You can buy all the way up to...
You can buy anything.
Four, yeah, you can buy anything, right? Okay, of course, you cannot go buy CCR $5 million. Lah. Okay, you got 4 million. You can also buy CCR, RCR, and OCR. Which one will you buy? And don't talk about... you know, it depends on OCR, RCR. Okay, just like for yourself, second property, which one will you buy?
Second property. Yeah. I wouldn't use the entire 4 million. Okay. Firstly.
Okay.
Do I really need to use all the amount?
No, you don't need to use all.
You okay. have.
If you,
you
want
have.
To buy a 1-beta, or 1.3 million at a new launch, also can.
Yeah, you can give the rest to Yurong. I will invest it for you.
I think I will go for the OCR area. But I will go for the bigger size units.
Which one?
4-beta, at least. Yeah.
Why new launch or resale?
Resale.
Why?
I think... If let's say we are looking at OCR area, I think your resale prices are still quite attractive. And statistically, I think for a OCR 4-beta, right, it accounts to just less than 20% in terms of the overall supply. So I think that in itself is already a huge rarity. And HDB upgraders, right, usually they will all go for the bigger units because they are so used to the space already. Yeah, with 4 million, I think it's quite comfortable. I'll just go for a 4-beta. But I think Yurong might have some differing thoughts.
Okay.
Just name one property that you will buy tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
4-beta. OCR resale.
OCR resale. OCR resale. Probably buy area that is like at Choa Chu Kang. Because. Because. I think it's just right next to Steng. Right next to Steng. When Canberra Town, before Canberra Town was announced, right, Sembawang prices...
Okay, we're not talking about landed, we're just talking about...
condo. Yeah. Yeah, because before Canberra Town was announced, right, Sembawang prices was statistically lower than Yishun prices. After Canberra Town was announced, Sembawang prices actually have a peak and it actually surpasses the price point at Yishun. So I believe with the new town hub at Tengah, we should see somewhat of a spillover effect.
Into Choa Chu Kang.
Yeah. And I think Choa Chu Kang, right?
So you buy a 4-beta at Choa Chu Kang.
There's not a lot of condo developments over there already.
Right. Which particular condo will you buy at Choa Chu Kang?
Either Wonderville or Rainforest.
Okay. 4-beta.
Yeah.
Where the wonder happens.
Which is
the
happening wonder. At how much? $2 million.
Less than 2 million.
1.8. Something like that, right?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks. How about you? Let me go to Grace first. Which one will you buy?
Okay. Wait, maybe we should caveat, right? Why we are only looking at private non-lender.
Yes, because right. of yeah. this chart. Yeah.
Yeah. So okay, like why is this chart only talking about private non-lender, yes, right? It's yes. also because like of the supply and demand question.
We should do one for landed also.
Yes.
The size of landed. Okay. Continue. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. But anyway, no. It's because like let's say if we were to look at the entire market landscape, right? Like moving forward, are you just writing like do this chart? Do
yeah.
This
I'm
chart?
I'm writing a note for Brian later, so he's gonna have a hard time. Okay.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So basically for as the demographic shifts in the market, right, as we move towards like 2030, where we will see more and more foreign interests, more and more foreign buyers, right, as the demographic moves towards like a more 50-50 kind, like 50 Singaporeans, 50 PR plus foreigners, the kinds of properties that these foreigners will be able to buy is only this private non-landed segment, right, which is why when for the purpose of the discussion, we are situating it within the private non-landed as something that is will have higher demand naturally when you compare across the different asset classes like HDB, lender and this. At a controlled supply, I think 20-odd%, it will still have the highest demand from both Singaporeans and foreigners. And PRs. Yeah, so that's to situate like in case the audience is wondering why we're only looking at private non-lender instead of comparing, like, why when I not choose to buy, like, lender?
No, I think he's waiting for your caveat to finish.
Okay, yeah. It's not like, looking at, like, all these, lah, okay?
But it's a good caveat. Thanks. Thanks for that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so, okay, if you were to ask me, right, okay, in terms of investment horizon, if it's just 5 years, then instinctively, I think I will not really be considering the freehold properties, really. So traditionally, freehold properties, they have this idea that, you know, they have a strong strong... it does not face the lease decay. It does not face any lease decay, right? So people love to buy freehold because they think that my property will not decrease. But if we're looking at a pure 5-year horizon, right, it may be better to instead turn your attention to the 99-year because, let's say, for freehold properties, right, there will be less transaction volume first, right, because of two factors. First is because for freehold properties, you do have that 15% premium generally, right? So this premium already makes it such that it is higher out of the reach of certain groups of buyers. So you have a smaller buyer pool. Secondly, if you are buying a freehold property, you may be looking at it as a legacy product, meaning that you want to keep it for your children, your grandchildren, or whatsoever. So this will indicate a less exchanging of hands, which means that the transaction volume may be less, which also means that it might not push the valuation so far up if it's a freehold property. So if you're asking me 5 years, I will look at the 99-year kind of properties. Okay, and then so for 99-year properties, naturally, I would want something bigger. Because... So, okay, just to add another caveat, right? But maybe, okay, so mainly, really, a lot of buyers, doesn't mean you cannot buy 2 bidders or 1 bidders, because right. there are a lot of buyers who are looking to enter the private market, and they are only able to have such a quantum, right?
Maybe correct.
1 to 2, 1.5 to 2, and they can only look at perhaps 2 bidders. And 2 bidders are fantastic, you know, let's say even in the RCR right. area, maybe as a half-owned stay, half-investment, right? Right.
But how about yourself? Let's say now, second property, you have $4 million total budget, left one name, what will you buy? You're left with one name.
Okay.
Because maybe your husband...
Man, I barely think about these type of questions. Like, if I have $4 million,
That's why you're here, to get you thinking.
Okay.
Okay, speak closer to the mic.
Sorry. So,
if you have $4 million and you can buy anything... Any condos and apartments, not a landed property, what will you buy tomorrow?
Okay, I may be inclined to buy a 2-bedder in the RCR. Yeah, so I think that the RCR and CCR, there's still a quite healthy price gap. So that it's an indication that there's still area for growth. I think as more and more young people, they have a higher buying power, they want to buy in earlier, they do not have such a big quantum, they have not started their family, they do not want such big units. They may be looking at the RCR, which is convenient for them to go to work. So I will look at maybe a slightly bigger 2-bedder in the RCR, which has a healthy price gap from the CCR region. Yeah, I think that will promise me some kind of growth, especially, you know, I think I'll look at the Greater Southern Waterfront area also. Yeah, I do quite like that area. So I might be looking at the area, 2-bedders, 2-bed, 2-bath, something that if I do not want to stay, I can rent out also, and then perhaps just keep it for an investment product.
Yeah. Awesome. So 2-bedder RCR region. New launch or resale?
I think I'm not picky. I think both are fine. It depends on the product itself. Whether I definitely want something that has a good gap and in an area where there is high growth. Yeah.
So you will either keep it for rental, then 5 years you can sell. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Great. How about you, Rong?
What will you want to buy?
Me? Okay, hey, I want to ask you. I'll answer first. Okay. Why are you wearing a cardigan?
Random question.
Okay. What I will buy is this. Okay. So we're not talking about landed properties, but what I'm going to buy is this. If let's say tomorrow I need to make a decision, I will immediately buy a resale, 2,000 square feet minimum 4-bedder upwards within 2.5 million. 4 criterias. Resale, 2,000 square feet above 4-bedder within 2.5 million. Because the entire island right now, less than, I'm not sure, probably less than 60 listings. This, I'm very confident that within 3 years, if I can buy something within 2.5 million, it will appreciate by at least 500,000. I'm very confident. Why? It's because of this. When we look at all these choices and you look at the type of buyers and demographics that are buying into this type of properties and minimum 4-bedder, maybe single 4-plate, big size, 2,000 square feet, or maybe it's a penthouse. Usually, their aspiration is to go for, let's say, a cluster house or a landed. But if you look at the entire island right now, an entry-level landed property is at least 3.6 million. Nothing below 3.6 million.
Unless it's 99 years.
Unless 99 years, right? And even 99 years is touching 3 already. Very scary. Even cluster houses, 99 years, touching 3 already, right? So if somebody do not have 3.6 million, and I'm very confident that $3.6 million inter-terrace, if somebody would buy today, it's going to be $4 million in 3 to 5 years' time. Yep. So there's going to be a huge gap. I buy something at 2.5. Next time is the next entry level is at 4 million for a landed. There's a huge gap for me to play around with in the sense that I can still sell at close to 3 million. So when I sell at 3 million, that property is already at 4 million. So there's a disparity gap happening from this type of property to the landed entry level. And I do not have to compete with buyers that are in a dilemma to buy landed or to buy my 4-bedder penthouse or 5-bedder penthouse. Right, so I think this is a sweet spot category, and we can see from the amount of supply in the market that is dwindling. So this is the type of property that I'll be hunting for tomorrow.
What's the region?
Yeah,
actually, and there's not much left, lah. It's only left. It will definitely be the OCR.
Mm.
There's
not much. Left.
Yeah,
definitely will be 99 years. But I'm going for size because 2,000 square feet, I just need to appreciate by $200 PSF. You will appreciate by 400,000. That's all.
Is that
all
a cut-off each? Cut-off each?
Actually, it doesn't matter because I'm very confident in the next 3 to 5 years, it will increase by $200 per square foot.
Because that would be the next best option.
Yes. Yeah. How about you, Rong?
The question is so
nice cardigan, by the way.
The question is so random because...
You're trying to copy me. Okay. Okay, continue.
You're giving a $4 million budget and everybody end up not using the $4 million budget. Then so what's the point, right? So I also want to give some caveat first. Number one, assuming that I can't buy a landed property because if let's say $4 million, of course, my first priority will go for landed.
After doing real estate for many years, right, there's a lot of caveats and a lot of like consideration points because as your knowledge build up, there's so many different choices. Okay, good. Okay, continue.
And so, next thing is, I will give two answers. Whether one, I want to max out the $4 million and I don't have to max out the $4 million, right? So, of course, if I'm going to max out the $4 million, assuming that you can give me $4 million and I don't spend it, you're not going to let me keep the spare change. Then, so what I will do is I'll go to the core central region, $4 million, freehold property. I'll try to get like a 4-bedder and within 1 kilometer of like the top schools. So this will be assuming I need to blow my budget, $4 million, and I can't go to a landed. All right. If I can keep some spare change, so I will treat all of you guys to McDonald's.
Oh, right? Okay.
What I will do is probably I will buy something in the rest of central region, something that is 4-bedroom, up to between, ideally, if I can keep it within $2.5 million, that would be great. But I think the options would be very little because this is not based on what you say, based on square footage wise, right? So I can be like a 4-bedder and it's about like 1,000, 3,000, 4 square feet. That's okay. Or if I want a bigger floor plate size, I can extend this budget to about like $3 million. Mm. So that would be my choice.
RCR, 4-bedder. It would still be a 4-bedder.
Yeah, I mean, 4-bedder is good. Like, I mean, there is enough budget for me to stretch. Okay. Yes.
Great, awesome. So, if we were to not just limit to a non-landed, right? Basically, I think the immediate option is... What is your immediate option, Josh? I mean, my immediate option is that if, let's say, it's within 4 minutes, to quickly snap up an inter-terrace, $3.6 million or something like that. What's your immediate option, Josh?
Yes, I will snap up an inter-terrace, but I'll be very particular in terms of the location. I want to buy in an area where there's a lot of very healthy transactions for landed property. That means either in D19 or D15, but it must fulfill certain criteria. That means the land size cannot be way too small. So it must be at least like 1,008 square feet. If I can get something like that, I will definitely go for it.
Mm. But D15 confirm cannot get already. D19,
D28. D19, yes.
D19 can.
D19 have.
Yes.
Yeah.
Coven area. Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be something that is brand new.
Right. Yeah. How about you, Grace? What will you buy? If now we open up all categories...
Definitely, immediately, the thought is to go to landed, right? Because it's the same thing if we're looking at supply and demand. Landed holds like at 73,000 units. So, of course, that is the rarest. So, definitely, I think the attention will flock there. If we're looking at... I have something I want to say and I forgot. Okay, so I will not get something that is brand new. Yeah, I might get something that is a little bit older that needs A&A. Maybe pump in the renovation, or maybe even might look at something. Maybe I buy something older at about maybe 3 mil, and then I use the 1 mil to rebuild, completely tear down and rebuild. Yeah, So I think that I will not be looking at.
But 3 mil with the mini landed already.
Yeah. Land size.
Okay, like maybe 3.5, feet. Then after A&A. Yeah, so you'll definitely I want to have some kind of. For it to be a little bit older so that there can be some renovation that I can do to pump up the value. Yeah, not purely from the land or the unit itself, but for me to be able to pump in some extra value into this landed that I buy.
Right. Awesome. Hey, I suddenly got an idea. The next... Sephora's the... Grace also.
I think we are already starting. Yeah, the next part already.
What?
Okay, the next... We can calibrate some of the webinars coming up, right? It's that two-person one. It doesn't have to be just one person. It can be two
Because you're very tired already, right?
No lah!
I think you're very tired already.
No, there can be a little bit like...
Banter style.
Yeah. It can be fun. God. It can be fun. Okay.
Banter style, everything.
Okay. Yeah. Actually, it's good because today I was just sharing with a client that later I'll be going for a shoot at banter style. Then they say they are looking for... Because they want to hear different opinions.
Awesome. Fantastic. Yes. Yeah. Great. How about you, Yurong? If you open up every category, will you one-shot buy 8 industrial property or... buy landed or whatever. What do
you think? Industrial property? Okay.
Why do you frown?
Okay.
Okay, this just shows that actually every type of property has different types of audience. Yeah. So somehow, because of preferences and our chain of thought, certain properties will always attract different kind of buyers.
And I think the caveat, like maybe like from my standpoint, is we are talking about growth. Growth potential.
ROI, yeah, because, in 5 years, right.
Because if you talk about for own stay, right, then you can have a million kind of different choices and all can be correct because it fits into your own goals and needs and wants. Okay, so coming back, $4 million, buy a landed, quite no-brainer.
So all agree.
Okay, so maybe my strategy might be a little bit different. So in the sense that, could I actually get a semi-detached land? Okay, maybe I cannot afford something that is like decent kind of condition that is like really that livable. But I probably do not mind if I can find something that is good land size, right? And I just buy the land first.
Regardless of location.
Yeah, regardless of location.
Just keep the land.
I keep the land first. Because the land will appreciate, right? So maybe now it exceeded my budget and I can't rebuild now. Because end of the day, land price will definitely go up.
Okay. Speaking of which, there's a very interesting property that we're currently marketing. It's at Ceylon. Being marketed by Sing Huat and Chewing. So it's so interesting is that this is a landed property, but the interesting point is that it's split into two.
Yeah.
However, when you buy the property at the bottom that currently we are marketing for our clients is that you also buy half the land. And that's a very interesting point. Actually, if you want to watch that home tour, just head on to Property Bros YouTube channel, click on Ceylon. There's also another one that is very interesting, which I just went to yesterday. It is at District 5. Chwee Chian.
Oh, Chwee Chian.
Correct. Did I pronounce it correct? Chwee Chian Road.
It's a detached Chwee Chian.
3,000 square feet detached.
Pasir Panjang area.
6.5 million. Yeah. It's the lowest quantum detached home that you can ever find. Because now the new subdivision rule is that detached has to be at least 400 square meters, which is about 4,100 plus square feet. But this is 3,000 square feet. So the quantum is kept nicely. Very nice, interesting land plot at the corner.
Yep.
Can also keep a lookout for the home tour. It's upcoming. So this is a little bit of promo. Okay. Yes.
Okay, so back to that. $4 million. Okay, yes. I buy the biggest land plot that I can buy freehold or 999 years. And I can blow my budget. I just want to secure the land first. Assuming the land price is consistent, it wouldn't make sense that if I buy the land price, right, it is like the same PSF as something that is like three-story built on the same street or the same locale, right? So I can just hold the land first. And maybe I get a construction loan to do a rebuilding. Yes. And if I really totally blow my budget already, I'll just hold on to land first. I just went to one of my friend's house this morning while I was delivering an option to purchase. Mm. And I thought, wow, the terrace beside, right? The owner is rebuilding it to the max GFA. Mm. And then I was saying, hey, you know my owner only bought it at like $800,000 land a few years ago. I was like, a few years ago? Okay, but after, of course, deeper probing, the few years ago was like back in like 2011. So that wasn't that such a few years ago.
Time
right?
flies when you're having fun.
But can you think of it again, right?
Your friend must be having fun.
Land, right? That was at the point of time, fire sale undervalued, right? And now the owner started rebuilding about 11, 12 years down the road. So this is exactly the same case scenario because you cannot just want the land will go out in pricing. We know that when you buy a landed property, end of the day, the value is depending on what is the gross floor area that you have built up as well as the land value.
Right.
So I'm just trying to maximize that.
Great. Okay. Talking about 2011, before I forget, fun fact is that last time, is very strange one. Last time, before 20, I don't know what is the cutoff year. Okay. I still remember during the Lehman Brothers season, the mindset of a landed home is that a landed home is inferior to a condo.
Mm-hmm.
Last time, there was this I think during 2009, the landed home at Gerard Drive, Corner Terrace, $1.2 million. But the condominium, which is Seletar Spring, which is right beside Gerard Drive, the three-bedder is probably at about 800,000. So you see the gap is like 400K.
Mm.
Today, of course, Seletar Spring, the three-bedder is at maybe about 1.4. But that Corner Terrace is at $4 million. There's a gap of $2 million. So instantly, there's like a 300% gap. So in the past, last time, consumers always think that a landed home is more inferior to a condo. Because when you tell people you stay in a condo, right, before Lehman Brothers season, it's like a little bit more atas. There's like condo facilities and all that.
Last
and then,
time, got 5C, man. 5C.
Uh-huh. Yes.
It's condo. Condo country is not a C.
Correct. And there was a shift. So the shift happened actually after 2013 when a lot of the cooling measures came in. And then in terms of the performance, landed just instantaneously shot up. So of course, we have another graph that I couldn't bring up today. So basically, there was a shot up where landed price index superseded basically condos price index. So that was a mindset shift. And then after on, landed homes just became more and more affluent. Of course, as you can see from the latest article, the core reason is because the supply is restricted. 73,000 landed homes compared to 340,000 non-landed homes. So basically, and now everybody just recognize that you're buying the land as well as the structure above the land. Josh, you were trying to say something, sorry.
Yeah, so just want to be a devil's advocate. Because only Singaporeans and PRs, some PRs, can buy a landed property, which also means that the buyer's pool are a lot more restricted compared to, say, you know, a condo. Of course, entering, say, at $3 million and when you sell at $4 million, it's just $500,000 over $3.5 million. So whether does the ROI really make sense comparing to if, let's say, I buy a private property at, say, $2 million and then, I don't know, maybe I exit at $2.8
million.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, do we have a statistics and data to show?
Sorry, what's your question again? Sorry.
So the question is, if we buy a landed property, because landed property we can only sell to Singaporean and PR, naturally the pool will be lesser compared to if I buy a condo.
PR cannot unless they get the LDAU.
So compared to if I buy a condo, condo everybody can buy, right? With all the restrictions and all that.
International demand.
Correct. And if let's say I buy at 3.5, I sell at $500,000. Quantum basis. But if I buy a condo, say at $2 million, and then I sell at 2.5, I still get a $500,000, but my ROI for the condo is actually a lot bigger. So do we have a data? Maybe you can...
I don't have data, but I have a viewpoint for this, right?
Sure.
Which is, naturally, landed will still perform better. Okay, overall, there are like two aspects of things. Because when we look at your wealth, right? Return on investment is important, but it is not the most critical. Okay, I'll give you an example. For example, today, just now, you know that question posed by Miao about $4 million, right? And then you all never blow your budget of that $4 million. You are leaving money on the table. So assuming today, it's the same scenario, right? If you are not maximizing, right, the entire value in, so what if I, okay, if I don't spend my $4 million, I can only invest $1 million. So what if the $1 million I can generate higher ROI than what I can generate for $4 million? Because overall, my wealth will grow bigger by being able to invest in larger amounts. That's one thing. And that's also why you see that you don't see, let's say, listed companies, right, when they listed, right, and then they actually go into good class bungalow, right, instead of buying maybe like 10 condominiums or like, you know, like 5 terraces. Mm. Because sometimes, what is that called? Like the final product is more than the sum of its parts. Like, for example, 1 plus 1 is no longer 2. Okay, 1 plus 1 now is like 5,
like
for example.
A single 2 carat is worth more than 2 times 1 carat.
Yes, got that. Yeah. So that is my rationale. In terms of number one, right, you must be able to maximize your entire capital. Mm. And so ROI is not the main component.
Wait,
right?
So, he's correct. So what you were trying to explain is that when you are invested into a larger total asset value, there's a higher chance that this asset value can grow faster because you have more. I mean, naturally, somebody that has more properties or bigger property appreciation, when it happens on a PSF basis, you have a quantum leap in terms of asset portfolio. Mm. Of course, just now that scenario, why some of them never blow their budget is because I set the caveat previously that we're looking at ROI as a main thing. But of course, if we're looking at asset expansion, provided you can choose the correct CCR property that can appreciate, lah. Don't buy something that was stagnant, lah. Correct? Yeah.
CCR, I think I would say in terms of the selection process has to be a lot more stringent.
Okay, but one thing to highlight also, right, to George, right, also is, let's say if we were looking at buying a 2 million versus a 4 million, right, a condo versus a landed, how much you actually invest in it is not... It's also not say the full 2 million and 4 million because there's leveraging.
Correct.
So you leverage on the OPM, other people's money, right? The bank's money to go. So technically, if you were to count how much like you invest in it and how much you earn and all that, it also makes a difference.
There's cash on cash return calculation component versus the total price component. Mm. Correct. So to George's point, and coming back to just now, when we talk about the surplus and as well as the change in mindset, right, was that if you look at the graph, there was a recalibration of this dark blue color and the green color. Green color is basically landed graph. So as you can see from Lehman Brothers season, somehow they exchanged and swapped places after 2010. So after the recovery of Lehman Brothers, landed just exploded, but condominiums basically still grew, but much slower than landed property. So suddenly there was an explosion point here. Yep. This part. And we call this the chasm gap. So just to recap again, what is the chasm gap? Is that this point, actually the shift came because of all the cooling measures and ABSD being implemented for condominiums. And that, of course, drastically reduced the amount of foreign buyers for condominiums as well. And then suddenly, I think Singaporeans just realized the value of owning a landed property as well. And there was this consistent uptrend in terms of this price difference gap between the two sets of property. So partially, I think also because of the fact that everybody perhaps started to realize that there's no more landed stock and it just plateaued, right? So we're always buying refresh stock. It has to, I mean, sometimes when we look at the amount of properties that's being bought by boutique developers to buy, and of course now, you want to buy brand new Cat 4 homes is not easy as well because it takes a lot of work. There's a lot of risk on the developer. They have to hunt for a land and then rebuild, make sure they can complete within 3 years and sell within 3 years. If not, they'll be taxed with the ABSD and stuff. So there's a lot of different kind of components. Yes, you want to say something?
I think there's two other things. Because last time, number one, right? Condos, there was a prior year, I forgot, that foreigners wasn't allowed to buy condos last time. And when foreigners can start buying condos, then the price went up for condominiums, right? So I think, of course, we can always entertain that little possibility.
Which year was that? Was it this?
I can't remember the year, right? So so what if we entertain the possibility that one day your landed property, foreigners can actually buy? It will not be at this kind of pricing. We can give a very simple example, right? Why on the mainland today, mainland meaning in the Singapore island, right? At like $4 million, you can buy, let's say, you know, like an inter-terrace. Correct? It's a freehold property. And Sentosa Island at 99 years, the detaches over there are like 25 million. Which you can come to the main island and maybe
get a GCB.
Get a good class bungalow.
Inter Terrace at Sentosa now is about 10 already.
So this is the price disparity between giving us a glimpse, right? When only locals can buy versus when we open up to the international market. And so, if I can, hopefully, in my lifetime, I will also be able to own a landed property.
Yep.
Yeah, because that's the only way to own land.
Okay, so but I think his question was that should somebody buy that center portion there, which is the 20% of all the housing stock in Singapore, compared to 5% for a bigger exit audience? Because if you look at this, we talk about 2030, there's going to be 7 million people in Singapore, out of which, if I were to speak to two people on the road, one will be a Singaporean, one will be a foreign resident. And of course, we always like to talk about this fourth box here, which are foreign investors who are not living in Singapore. So basically, the condominiums are the only class of properties that opens up to every singular citizenship.
Yep.
So should somebody buy it? Because this is like 77 million. So we're thinking like 340,000 divided by 7 million, which is technically how many percent? 340 divided by 7 million.
5%. 4.8%.
4.8%, right? So it's like a ratio of 4.8% versus 73,000 divided by 3.5 million. 2%. So which one has a better probability?
I wouldn't really say 3.5 million because we also want to see the income brackets.
Hey, good point.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay. So, coming back to the percentage, help me to make sense of the percentage. So we're talking about buying condominiums. You have 340,000 vis-a-vis 7 million people and then 73,000 vis-a-vis 3.5 million people. Which one has a bigger audience? It should be the landed, right?
If
the landed has a bigger audience, right? Because 73,000 vis-a-vis 3.5 million Singaporeans.
No, but yours is international market, right?
Yeah, of course, there's this...
Then you must...
Okay, there's this part that is... There's not...
Population.
No, then... okay, then we just look at these three population.
No, I think what George is trying to say, right, is that not all 3.5 million people
can afford
landed.
Yes.
So you have to see...
So we need to find charts. Let's do some charts to talk about income levels.
Maybe you should ask Brian to come into this channel.
I think it's very simple, right, because the top 10 percentile in terms of declared income...
Okay, so we need to do a demographic income chart.
Okay, top 10% based on NOA declaration, right? If I remember correctly, if you own about, if you declare about like 180,000, I think you are in the 10th percentile in terms of like income bracket, 180K, right? So generally, we always know that in terms of a combined family income, let's say, you know, like 15,000 combined family income, I would say that generally 15K, whether it's a combined income, individual income, right? That will be sort of like a quite comfortable kind of benchmark for you to enter into a private property that is about $2 million range and higher. You know, of course, you know, like I can be a lower income bracket, I can get into one better. We don't need such a high income bracket. So in summary, I would say that
$2 million now, what is the money installment?
$2 million now, that's about 7,000 plus.
7 to 8,000 really.
15K a bit tough. I think 15K
a bit tough. About 24K combined income to afford.
15K, you see, combined income, let's say husband and wife total 15K, take home, right? It's only about 11K.
That is tough.
Then pay 7K mortgage, you're left with 4K disposable income. Actually, it's tough already.
Sorry.
Let me cut that one out. The numbers are.
It's okay.
It's a hard truth.
Unless interest rates goes down, right? But TDSR is not reversible. So basically, I think comfortable has to be 20,000. I think I
come up with the wrong number. Hold on.
Comfortable has to be 20,000.
So this is actually a question that was asked during the recent webinar.
Right.
What's the question? The question was...
what is the comfortable level, is it?
Whether people can still afford $2 million properties, right?
Something like that. Will Singaporeans be able to afford beyond $2 million projects? So I think there's an increasing sentiment that prices are increasing, you know, and are the income levels, the wage levels, catching up with this increase?
$2 million, your installment is 7,900 for a loan tenure of 25 years. Somebody is 40 years old, 4% interest rate. You just loan 1.5 million, 7,900. And if we take a healthy level, we take 7,900 times CPS recommendation of about 35%, right?
That one cannot like that. So okay, just now I say 7,000.
That means you have to earn about 20,000.
Yeah. Just now I use 7,000 is mainly because I'm using a 30-year loan tenure, right?
Okay.
So, of course, number one, I would say that generally, because as like how the prices went up, right? I think we have a discussion of this before, is that maybe in the future, right? People who can really afford private properties are actually owners who own private properties today. Yes. Because you are sitting on an asset that actually help you to build equity on top of your income increase, which allows you to actually get a bigger value property in the private property space. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So I would say that in generally, I think whether is it like condo or landed, which one is better for you? I think number one, we have to decide what is the price point that we want to enter. That's number one. Number two, I always mention that how much of it is based on own stay and how much of it is based on investment. Meaning, for example, if I have a portfolio of $4 million and I understand that like I have investment priorities and I have like a big family, then maybe landed suits the own stay needs because you need that space. Yep. But if today you are a couple and you want to have a more conservative approach, of course, you don't need to stay in a landed property, right? Mm. And so it might make sense for you to split into two properties. Maybe the own stay one, $1.5 million. Mm. The one that you invest is at $2.5 million. Because I always share that like in the investment property, we can always be more aggressive. We can max out the total debt servicing ratio because we are using opium. Mm. Opium. Other people's... Okay, I'm just trying to make a joke. Now. Okay, oh, we are using OPM, other people's money. And when you use other people's money, people are paying for it. And hence, you are actually more... You are safe in that context. But when it comes to the property that you are staying in, even though total debt servicing ratio is at 55%, I always share with my clients that it will be ideal if the monthly installment do not exceed 40% of your income. And then that will be more comfortable.
So if you look at this, $2 million purchase, assuming somebody has already fulfilled their first HDB property MOP and they are 40 years old, because now the average marrying age, I don't know what's the latest statistics, but just assume it's 35. Maybe after graduation, you part off for 5 years, right? Then you get married 30, then you get your BTO at 35, your MOP at 40, you sell it. By the time you can buy a private property, you're 40 years old.
Wow.
Then 25 years left. Of course, you can refinance and stretch to 35, but let's just take 25. Okay, have a look at this. If you go by the 40% rule that you shouldn't spend more than 40% of your monthly income, then you should earn about 20,000 to be comfortable. If not, at least I think 50% it will be about 16,000 to be comfortable, provided maybe you don't have an extravagant car or something like that. Okay, looking at this, if we do another calculation, this will also mean that something very serious is happening. If let's say you look at the average 3-bedder new launch is at 2.1 million, we're just doing Botany, right?
Botany.
At the dairy farm. Okay. So, okay, why was that a joke? It's because you all keep saying Botany at Butley.
Yeah, oh my god. Okay,
so, because I, you know, like I always has this, I quite like this project, Botanic at Butley. Just by the way, Botanic at Butley.
Okay.
Just quick advice to the audience. It's not any product recommendation.
Okay. So Botany at Dairy Farm. Okay, just have a look at this. Just have a look. Down payment, including stamp duty, is 569,000.
Yep.
That means if you were to buy a $2 million property, what's going to happen is that your HDB has to make a lot of profit. Okay. In order for you to go to that level. Okay, but what I'm trying to share is this. So, there was this series of books that I completed a long, long time ago. It's by this author, Koo Soo-yong, a fantastic author.
Nice.
So, I read all his books. Of course, Koo Soo-yong is still practicing. Kudos to you. Okay. So, there was this particular chapter that he was talking about the potential of a lot of current citizens and children inheriting their parents' property.
Yes.
Old money.
And there's going to be a lot of this old money coming from the HDB that will be passed down to their kids. And of course, this property has to be sold. So for example, if a parent has a 5-room HDB, right, and they move on, they pass away, they have 3 kids. It has to be sold because all the 3 kids have their own property, HDB or private. They have to sell it and they will split. But if let's say it's to a single child, instantaneously that property is sold, maybe 500,000, fully paid already, 600,000, they have a owe money to instantly buy into a private property. So there will be this class of Singaporeans that will be using a lot of inheritance money to buy properties. And that will further escalate the price point. Because the natural instinct is that when somebody inherit funds, they want to also immediately see what they can do with this, to park into an asset.
Yes.
Not just live in a bank, because if you calculate the average corrosion rate in terms of deflation of your money left in a bank in US dollars is averagely about 24% per annum. So if you leave your $1 million in the bank in US, technically they calculated what's going to happen is that your money will be eroded by 24% at the end of 12 months. And this is flooding to the rest of the world, because take note that when we talk about M2 money supply, we all share the same pot, right? So what is technically happened is also in Singapore, like you look at the car price that you can buy in terms of the type of car that you can buy 3 years back versus now. The type of car that you can buy 3 years ago, now you can only buy half the car. Similarly, the property that you can buy 3 years back, now you can only buy half that property. And of course, our inflation rate does not take into account property and cars. We only take into account food, right? So, sorry, I just saw that article yesterday that there's going to be very cheap hawker food in HDB coffee shops, mandatory or something like that. Did you read that article? Right, you read that article, right? Fantastic. This is why our government is so fantastic. Because we control the food price. And in fact, I think a lot of people really love Singapore because we still can find cheap food.
Yes. Right?
But on top of that, I think cars and properties, you have to put into an asset class that fights that kind of asset inflation. And this is extremely scary because in future, we might be talking about a $3 million entry point for a new launch 3 beta. Agree. In 5 or maybe 10 years' time. Right. Okay, great. Sorry, you're trying to say something.
Oh, okay. I think back to the... what you reference? Back to what you referenced to regarding the Kusuyong's article.
Old money, yes.
Regarding the HDB, there is also another viewpoint. Is basically, because they came from the boomer era, right? So after the boomer era, we have like lesser. You know, we are an aging population. So what happens is when I talk about HDB versus private property inheritance, HDB, your child is unlikely to be able to inherit it if they already own a HDB, because they have to choose between keeping their own HDB or inherit the parents' HDB. And likely, it should be selling the parents' HDB if it's older.
Yeah.
Correct? Unless they already own a private property and you are passing down a HDB that is acquired before 30th August 2010, then the beneficiary can actually hold on to that HDB itself without having to let go. So what happens is, in the article that Kusuyong mentioned, that this influx of supply of HDB that has to be sold might actually cause HDB prices to come down.
Yes.
Temporarily.
There's too many of these baby boomers that will need to transfer all this...
assets.
Yes, yes.
In the form of HDB.
Yes. Yeah. Sure.
Yes, 5 books.
Yeah.
5 of this series.
Ah, this part. Aging population, right? Is this even legal?
What do you mean?
Why do I have the whole book here?
For review only.
Aging population, okay? This is the part. Yeah.
I own the physical book, so like I have supported it already.
Okay. I also own the physical. Oh, okay. This part. Have a look at this. This is the part. Look at this. Potentially what's going to happen, the number of deaths of baby boomers generation in the next 5 year period, 20 here, there's going to be about 300,000. And what it's going to mean is that the amount of HDB properties that will be passed on, number of HDB flats released due to deaths in each 5 years period. Look at this escalating amount. So this is going to flood the resale market because the children will naturally have to sell it. You know, just now you mentioned a date, right? The cutoff date is when inheritance...
30th August 2010.
Just to maybe give a context to our audience in case they are a bit confused, like whether they can keep the HDB or not keep the HDB. Okay.
This is actually one of the cooling measures that was
So if the deceased bought the flat before 30th August 2010, the beneficiary may keep both the prior property and the HDB. If they bought it after then they cannot keep. Right? Okay.
You want to explain to the audience why is there this come. Specific date?
Come.
Reason is because one of the cooling measures then was, okay, prior to 30th August 2010, anybody can always come back to buy a HDB without letting go of their private properties. As HDB prices was very heated up from 2006 until 2013, that was about like 100% increase in HDB property price. The government decided that, okay, in order to, maybe one of the reasons to restrict all this price growth, right, is to prevent private property owners, right, from being able to acquire HDB because it's cheap for rental yield as an additional property asset. And that's why this rule was implemented that if you were to purchase a HDB after 30th August 2018, after 30th August 2010, you have to let go of all your private property holdings within 6 months.
Yep. So this was in conjunction with the rule. So last time, actually before 2010, what happened was that a lot of private property owners, they own multiple private properties, but they come out and buy one HDB and they can sell after 1 year and they can also rent out.
If so, they don't take a HDB grant, they don't take a HDB loan.
Yeah, they get a bank loan. They can even take a bank loan. They can sell after 1 year. So that shot up the entire price of HDB resale properties. And that's why there was this rule. And that is in conjunction with this beneficiary portion. So basically, if the beneficiary already owns private property, it will depend on the date that the inherited HDB flat was bought by the deceased. All right. So basically, if it's they buy above before 2010, you can keep both. Now, if we come back to this, so this is basically what we were talking about. It will potentially flood the market. That might affect HDB resale price. But also, once they clear off this property, it's technically a fresh set of down payment for the buyers, the beneficiary to own, right? And then they will... And usually, they will sell it if, let's say, there's at least two siblings because they need to sell it, right? They don't know how to split and stuff like that, right? Grace, you were trying to say something.
Yeah, but anyway, okay, if we can look at this, you know, if we just zoom out and look at this from a more societal, sociological perspective, right? It's actually very, very exciting what is happening in the entire HDB market. And public housing for Singapore has always been a way to uplift the entire economy where we, you know, we give a lot of support, we give a lot of grants. And I mean, the government, so HDB properties are like the first step for Singaporeans to start this asset progression.
Right.
Yeah, so with all these, it's a very fascinating topic to think about with like, you know, the supply of HDB and also this in relation to the demographics, right? The demographic shift towards a more and more aging population where the HDB will now change hands. I think it will have some have some implications on the market.
Yeah, okay, take note for that 2010 rule. We missed out one thing, is that if you inherit that, you have to move in.
Yep, correct.
You have to rent out your private property. And that is something that is very complicated in terms of its policy because firstly, you have to make sure that the deceased bought before this and then you have to move in. And so you might be living in a landed, but you have to move back to a HDB. Yep. So most of the time, they might sell. And of course, if let's say there are three kids and the three children, one of them already own a HDB and the will is that this HDB home from the parents needs to be split equally among them and one of them already own HDB, then naturally they will sell because they cannot keep it.
And I think if they were to sell, there isn't that traditional, like, you are the seller, you know, that mindset that you want to hit an extremely high price. You might just let go of the property if it reaches the right price. Not the rocket high price, but just a right price in the market. You might be able to just let it go and carry on, move on.
Right.
But I think overall,
I think this one will also trigger off a ripple effect. In the sense that if, let's say, I'm in that situation and I know that, okay, I have these HDBs that I can potentially cash out. And let's say it is a 4-room HDB, it's an older flat, let's say at about 500,000. Split with my sibling, let's say I'll have 250,000. I will then start to think, what can I do in my current property? Can I also leverage on the fact that potentially I'll have these $250,000 of cash coming in? Yeah. And I haven't even include, I don't know, even a CPF OA that I can potentially extract out from the deceased, right? And I use this opportunity to sell my current private property and then I make one final big move. It could potentially be like this because what is on a lot of people's mind is that if I don't act on it now, with more cooling measures that might come out in place, it might be harder for my next generation to maybe even own another property.
Actually, looking at this table, it's a bit scary. There might be a potential oversupply of HDB properties in future. You look at this. I mean, now we're in 2023. There's a, there's a lot of demand for BTOs and all that because there was a lot of delay in construction and all that. Right? But if you look at this, the age category 25 to 29, by 2026, it's going to reduce and it's going to further reduce in 2031, which means that government might not need to build so many BTOs anymore.
Yep.
And there's going to be a fresh set of resale properties from the baby boomer side. And that can, I mean, I think in terms of calibration of supply of HDB properties, it has to be very, very careful. If not, the price will be drastically affected.
Yep. And I think these are the details that are mostly overlooked by a lot of consumers. Right. Especially all this.
I think overall, there are like two parts of this story. I think like overall, the government has already been doing a good job with regards to like, in terms of like affordability in Singapore.
Mm.
Just like to the point that you mentioned, in the sense that I do not really have to be rich. I can still like live comfortably to a certain extent because I can go to a coffee shop and have my under $5 kind of meal. I can take the public transport, which is very connected and accessible. And not like, I don't even need to have like my own car to travel, right? And then I can go for a BTO to get a roof for my family.
Right.
And the BTO is like 9 years. So it will definitely last my generation.
Definitely.
Right? And I love the fact that a lot of our houses are actually 9 years. Mm. That actually prevents the new generation, right, to actually be restricted by all this old money. So imagine if all the properties are all freehold properties, right?
Mm.
It will be very hard for future generations to be able to start from scratch.
Mm.
Yeah, because there is no refresh of lease. There will be no new developments to inspire and recreate. Like,
it will be an old country.
It will be an old country, right?
Yeah. And all the buildings are old.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes Singapore very different and unique, right, in this landscape.
Right.
Awesome. Oh, very exciting.
Josh is excited. So today we talk about a lot of things and... This was a very long episode because we have been sitting here for the past like 1 hour, close to 2 hours.
I think next time we order meal lah.
So we started from talking about, what did we start from? I also forgot already. We talked about some of the latest cool charts that we had.
Oh, the projects that, the ABSD.
Oh, we talked about the 23 projects that will meet
27
projects.
And then we talk about the projects that will hit TOP.
We talk about the 38 projects hit TOP, would there be oversupply? We talk about the latest cool chart of the supply index from Property Guru.
Mm. Yep.
Then we talk about the bedroom types in terms of sizing.
Mm-hmm. $4 million, what you can
$4
buy.
And then we move into
$4 million, what do you buy for ROI.
And then, of course, we deviated into...
Talk about landed segment. And then the HDB.
You talk about the baby boomers' inheritance. Then we came to this part about should you buy a condo or landed? And then after that...
Decent food.
We went to... So if you want to contribute to any form of suggestions on what you want to hear on the next few episodes, do comment down below on the comment portion and we're very happy to take in comments. So, of course, very happy to have a new guest today, Grace. Give her a round of applause. Thank you. Yeah, give our media team a round of applause behind the scenes. Awesome. And, of course, our regulars, Yu Rong and George with a new hairstyle and new cardigan. All right, so we will see you on the next one. And meantime, take care.
Bye.
Which camera?
Do you just dab? Yeah. Who did you learn that from?
It just came to my mind. Yeah.